I know. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Chair, I move we approve accounts payable. We have a cycle date 11-4 through 11-8. $2,126,345.98. The county manager has reviewed and approved such.
It's deputy county manager this time.
Tim, go ahead, Dan. Would you like
second.
A second?
I'm sorry.
It's up to you. Whatever. I can do it.
No, I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Let's at least move it forward to discussion.
You might have a split vote.
Go ahead, Dan.
Okay. I've got a short list of items of note. Payment to Avtech Electronics Incorporated in the amount of $12,901.98 for the Sheriff's Patrol budget. It's for outfitting a patrol unit number 966, which is a 2019 Chevy Tahoe. Eaton Sales and Service LLC. It's actually two payments from the YVRA budget, $89,245.75 in total. Upgrade of the rental car fuel farm and Airside Fuel Master fuel management system. That's an install on that system. Luan and Associates Incorporated, doing business as Luan Technology, payment of $5,206.25 from the IT administration budget for networking support. Payment to what I think is and potentially an acronym, but LEDS or LEDS LLC from the Clerk and Recorder Elections budget. $4,834.12. This is preparation and mailing of Tabor notices to approximately 8,400 voters. Two payments to the City of Steamboat Springs. One of $11,892.51 from the Building Department for October 2019 permit fees and taxes. Second is a payment of $135,201.14 from the Clerk and Recorder for motor vehicle ownership tax and fees for October 2019. Payment to Old Castle Southwest, or SW Group, Incorporated, of $23,814.93, Public Works gravel budget. This is for gravel on County Road 33. A payment to Mead and Hunt, Incorporated, from the YVRA budget of $32,916.26 for apron, taxiway, fog seal project management and support, and a payment to American Road Maintenance of $137,896.56 from the YVRA budget for AIP number 46, which is the apron, taxiway, fog seal. And then the final payment of note is the one to Criminal Addiction Incorporated. The payment to that vendor caught my eye. It is a payment of $5,000 from the Sheriff's Department from the detention budget. And this is for a class on drug interdiction. That's it.
The, what was it? $5,800 payment to Little Lambs. Was that First Impressions money? What was that? Refresh my memory. We found a way to get some money to Little Lambs.
Well, we didn't find a way. They were eligible for our existing programs, Tim.
I'm sorry. Poor phraseology. I
okay. I don't know about that specific payment, but we did. We do have some money in First Impressions that can be used for
capital
programs and for lots of different things. Oh. But they were eligible for that funding. I don't know if that's what that is specifically.
Okay.
But they also receive CCAP money. I mean, there's several things that they might receive.
And then, you know, it's just interesting to me looking down the list of payables that. And it's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but there are people like Scott Smith. It seems like it should be a business name. Same thing with James Hoff. I know that that's Snap-on tools, you know, but I see so many of those kinds of...
So they got 1099s on them.
Yeah, that's...
No, I'm sure. It's just for in terms of understanding what's on
So the Scott account. Smith is Scott Smith.
Doing business as...
Scott Smith.
That's how he filled out the form, so that's how they entered it.
Okay, so that's what it is.
That's what it is.
Okay, fine.
Any other discussion?
No.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
We did not meet yesterday in honor of Veterans Day.
Madam Chair, I would move that we approve consent agenda items A, B, C, and D.
Second.
And E. I'm sorry. And E.
Also E? Okay. Any other? Yeah.
Second.
Okay. Other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Steve, I assume you're here to... Do you want to tell us about C? Is that why you're here? Go ahead, Linnea.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I am here regarding a resolution to authorize the acquisition of property adjacent to the District 3 Road and Bridge Shop and to authorize the chair to sign any documents necessary to complete that closing. This is to purchase approximately 8.66 acres adjacent to that road and bridge shop. It's part of a larger project that the town of Oak Creek is undertaking, in which they're buying property from the Garrities. That property is then going to be subject to a subdivision exemption, division of land for public purpose, which has been administratively approved by the planning department. And that plat is pending. That plat will also be finalized on the closing date of this project. I'm asking for the approval ahead of time because I do anticipate several documents to be signed. I also anticipate those documents to be finalized between now and closing date. So it will be difficult to get in here between now and then. There is one correction I would like to make from the communication form. In the background information, the third paragraph, it says that a merger of title document would be completed at the time of closing to merge the current Road and Bridge shop with this property. We're just doing it differently now. That's going to be done via a plat note instead of an actual separate document.
Plat note on what plat? The main plat that has all the stuff, all the Garrity property on it?
Which it's the plat that's dividing up the whole of the Garrity property into the three separate parcels.
Okay.
And that's done
We're all good with that,
because of the way the planning regulations are drafted. It actually prohibits the merger of title document being used on a platted parcel. So it was a technicality that...
I'm glad your own rules, your own rules or our own rules could stumble us down the road here.
Exactly.
Those parcels will never be merged?
It can't be on the plat, evidently.
It can't be by a merger of title document, which is just a form like that. If we do want to go forward with that, which our office does suggest, It would just be a consolidation plat.
Okay, fine.
So, the plat note will just make it clear that none of the properties can be, are, you know, subject to residential development and things like that.
I see. Okay.
Am I going to need to plan to go to the closing in order to sign these documents?
No.
Okay.
Got a little bit of clarification on that on Friday. It is anticipated, much to my surprise, that there will be the documents to be signed prior to that Tuesday. So we can handle that electronically and et cetera.
Okay.
So.
What is the closing date?
The 26th
of November.
Yep.
That's all the upside. What's the downside?
No downside.
What? That's not possible.
This is all that was direction. Just this is all direction. That we
is there anything to be inferred from your presence here rather than a county attorney Knauss?
She's been handling this entire thing. We can infer that that continues to be the case.
This
fingerprints all
to
over.
Yeah, no, it was early on asked if I would take this project. So it's this, the planning item, and then also the PDR project.
Great.
Are you ready for a motion?
I am. I do not have any other questions. Do you have any other questions? Great.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve and authorize your signature on all documents necessary to complete the purchase of an 8.66 acre portion of the property known as the Garrity property from the town of Oak Creek, and also authorize the approval of the resolution 2019-059. Resolution authorizing the acquisition of property adjacent to the District 3 Road and Bridge Shop.
Enthusiastically second.
Yeah, we should allow you to make that motion.
No, I'm sorry.
I think last week he actually requested that.
I think I identified you.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thanks, Lynette.
Thank you.
I assume you're staying here.
Yeah, I'm just going to move over.
All right, we are here to consider approval of the funding for PDR Project 195, the Oak Creek Mountain Park. Claire, do you want to give us the overview here? Yeah. Don't say anything you don't need to say. It's okay.
Okay. I'll let some other folks do a lot of the talking here. As we're all well acquainted, this has been a complicated project and absolutely amazing and fantastic project that the BDR board is very happy to see come through. Absolutely thrilled, and thank you. For the dedication of the property owners to provide an opportunity for Oak Creek residents and visitors alike to take advantage of some outstanding hiking trails and some incredible views. So with all that being said, we felt this was definitely a good buy, if you will, for the program, not only financially well worth it, but certainly, again, in the bigger scale, in the bigger picture of things, in addition to its amenity that it's going to be providing to the local folks and visitors alike, it's also a great little niche for wildlife and you know, the birds and so on and so forth. So it's an area that is clearly under some development pressure, and we're seeing some expansion going on now, of course, in Oak Creek. And again, the view corridors from there are just outstanding. So definitely this would be a prime opportunity for some development. So our contribution we're recommending for funding is $200,000 towards the conservation easement purchase, which amounts to 57%, and the landowners are contributing $100,000, which is about 29%, and the balance is coming from a variety of different sources, such as Gates Family Foundation, Yampa Valley Community Foundation, State of Colorado, DOLA, and the town itself. 103 acres, and there are a few housekeeping measures, if you will, that are outlined in the agenda application form. Minor, but they're all going to be resolved and be in time for closing. So I'll let you talk a little bit about that.
As far as the housekeeping measures, probably the primary one is we've got to modify the boundary between pieces of this acquisition and what's being annexed to the town of Oak Creek due to a recent shed expansion that came to our attention. And at any rate, that is well underway. The surveyor and I chatted last week as well as yesterday in follow-up. You should see that it's just a matter of changing some legal descriptions and making sure that they get into the appropriate documents. It's closing is scheduled 2 weeks from today at this point in time. And so we're doing all of those last-minute things that it takes to make sure that all of that has been undertaken and reviewed. Not only that, but it's butt up against the Thanksgiving holiday, which adds its own level of complication. I did hand out here just a minute ago in an informative sense of kind of where all of these dollars are coming from and what their status is. This, though, you know, when we got the Community Foundation monies, it stated that it was the last piece of it. Frankly, you guys are the last in at this point. Everything else we have in hand. And the additional request beyond the Tier 1 request to help out with some of the expenses here, we're working through all of that, and that part in consideration is very much appreciated. This has been a three-year undertaking, and because of its complicated nature, it's taken some additional work in the world, particularly with survey costs here. So with that, the other two things are relatively minor. They're just follow-ups to comments. With the transition of Cattlemen's and the Yampa Valley Land Trust and then the itemization of those transaction costs. Those are just kind of final things that need to happen at the end of the project.
And we did also recommend up to $50,000 for transaction costs, provided that the proper documentation is received for reimbursement of that.
Is the town planning to annex this?
No, not okay. The conservation piece, but there is a portion of the acquisition from mm-hmm. the Garrities, just over 6 acres, that will be annexed into the town, and that's one of those satellite things that are happening.
Got it.
As well as the transaction.
So who's going to own that 6 acres?
Who the town.
The town will, and then annex it in.
Correct.
Yes,
the annexation is kind of that last piece of things because it's just the way that the timeline works.
So you guys going to have a management plan up there?
Yeah, the town of Oak Creek is working with the South Route Recreation Association, which is representative of a lot of different public, private, and governmental, I guess that's public, entities, and we'll be working under the auspices of a memorandum of understanding to manage the property. The town board made it very clear at the very beginning that the town didn't have the capacity to add this kind of project to its wheelhouse, and then so worked with the South Threat Rec Association to put together that maintenance and management plan to assure that those things like signage and weed control and all of those things that go along with the conservation easement, as well as a parcel of property that's open to the public, were addressed appropriately.
An active recreation.
Yeah, and the South Mount Rec Association's leadership, the president of the board is Mark Wertheimer. So, again, we bring Rocky Mountain Youth Corps to bear. I sit on that as an officer, and that we're looking at the various opportunities through GOCO and all of those trail maintenance endowment fund and Route County Riders. Steve Williams is involved with the Rec Association. So we've got a good, solid group there that's very interested. And Russ was actually at the last meeting we had, and there's a good active group of folks from the area that really want to be participatory with this. So we've come a long way.
Very cool. Any questions?
Yeah, I'd put a motion on the table and then maybe make a comment and see if I can
get my phone to shut up.
Yeah, sorry about that. Will you each say your name for Deanna?
Mary Alice Page Allen. I'm working with the town of Oak Creek on this project.
Claire Spallers with Purchase and Development Rights Board.
Molly Fales with the Colorado Commons Agricultural Land Trust and the Yampa Valley LLC, Land Trust LLC.
Great. Madam Chair, I would move to approve the funding of PDR Project 195, the Oak Creek Mountain Park, in the total amount of $250,000, of which up to $50,000 may be used for reimbursement of transaction costs and authorization to sign the agreement concerning conservation easement between Route County and Colorado Cattlemen's Ag Land Trust.
Second.
I realize that I didn't ask if you all would like to make any comments before we move forward.
I think the most important thing is that if we finally get to closing in 2 weeks, I will be able to afford a proper haircut.
Oh, well, you get one.
Sounds fine.
Something saves in my life.
Okay. On behalf of Clay, we were just absolutely thrilled that the whole thing is happening. This has been a long, long time coming.
Okay. Go ahead, Tim.
So I guess anybody that's a fan of collaboration and partnerships, I guess this is quite an achievement, the number of moving parts that have come together. And so I would congratulate everybody that's been involved in it, in particular Mary Alice, I think, who's kind of been the one that has driven this from day one, and I'm excited to see that she can get it to the finish line. And then I think I'd just like to thank the Garrities. I'm pretty sure you guys didn't do it for the money. I'm pretty sure you did it for all of the right reasons, and I think that everybody in the South Route community appreciates your contribution. And thanks to the PDR board for considering a project that may have been outside of what, you know, the normal looking projects that we do, but recognizing that it did meet the objectives of the PDR program and supporting it. So those are my comments.
Would you like to make any comments, Doug?
Yeah, I congratulate the whole crew. Mary Alice, you did a great job. And I mean, the Garrities as well, and the town of Oak Creek for sure. And, you know, and again, this is new. We've done this across the street over here, so, and again, done this before, and I think it fits within our PDR realm and the rest, and so I'm really excited about you guys closing up on the deal. You guys, us guys, everybody, the community, closing up on the deal. Very good.
Yeah, I would just echo those comments. I mean, this is pretty impressive to see you pull this together, Mary Allison. This will be a huge benefit for the residents, not just of Oak Creek, but of the whole county. So thank you for your work on that.
Took more than just me, but I can't tell you. You know, they gave us the time. The Garrities definitely gave us the time to do it, and that's what it took to make this successful.
Yeah, great. Any other discussion?
Yes. May I offer a suggestion to amend the motion?
Yes.
That it be pending final approval of all documents by the county attorney's office.
So I would accept that amendment to my original motion.
I accept this.
You second? You accept?
Second, yeah.
Great.
Can I make a question for Linnea on that note? Should it be to the LLC or to Cattlemen's in the motion? Does it matter?
It should be to the LLC.
Okay, we should make that amendment too then.
Yeah,
I didn't notice that. Thank you.
So the Yampa Valley Land Trust LLC. Rather.
So the easement is between Rouse County and the Yampa Valley Land LLC. Trust LLC.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that motion should be amended. You okay with that?
Yep. Oh, no.
Sorry to make it more complicated.
You got all that, Deanna? All right, perfect. Oh, any other discussion? Amendments? Comments? All right.
Good job.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, guys.
Just for the record, Russ, I kind of like the hair the way it is. I don't cut it.
Thanks, Doug.
She's two-fisted over here, so.
All right, so we're hearing a request from the treasurer to approve purchase of a tax remittance processing solution. Lane, will you give us the background information, please?
So this is a system that's compatible with our current taxing software. And how it works is it would scan the coupon of the tax statement. There'd be a barcode on that, and it would automatically pull the account up and apply the payment to the account. It checks for things like liens. It makes sure that it's paying the right amount, and then it saves an image of the payment in the account. So it can process fairly quickly. I think they said 145 documents per minute. It also has a marker.
Say what? 145 per minute?
Per minute.
How do you get them loaded in there that fast?
So you have to sort. So you have to open the envelopes and sort them appropriately. So it has to be one coupon per one check in one pile. And then if you have multiple checks in one coupon, that goes in a different pile. And then if you have multiple coupons but one check, that goes in a separate pile.
Huh.
And then you just load them in the scanner. The scanner's fairly large, and it goes like a snake through as it checks things. And then the operator is able to see on the screen if there's any flags. If anything pops up, like it has a lien, it will say, this account has a lien. Do you want to accept the payment? So then you would check to make sure it's a certified payment, because we only accept certified payments for liens. And you could say yes or no, and then either pull it out or allow it to go through.
Hmm. So then after you get them all loaded, then it does them 145.
Yeah. And it only brings it up if there's an error. So they say 85%. And we're one of the only counties that doesn't have this, that has Tyler. So I've been able to talk to a lot of the other companies. That's why I came with a specific company, because this is the specific company that's compatible
with Tyler.
Yeah. And the other counties say about 85% of the payments go without flagging anything. And then the other probably 10% is because there's a lien or the check's wrong. Maybe they wrote the wrong amount or the numbers don't match. And then 5%, it flags something, but really nothing's wrong, and they let it go. So it seems to be incredibly accurate.
So it's basically a scanner.
It's and software.
And the software.
Yeah, the software is probably the bigger. The software is the bigger.
So if you're just looking at one payment, a real simple one with one coupon, one check, your employee would put this into the scanner. It scans it, and then the software will determine if everything's okay with it.
Yeah.
And if it is, it'll make the deposit, in essence.
Right. So after it scans all those checks through, so it, you can do as many as you get in the mail that day, scan it all through, it creates a electronic upload to the bank. So it's encrypted. You upload that to Wells Fargo, and it takes the images with the deposit, and it deposits that also automatically.
And then creates some kind of a report for you at the end of the day showing them.
Yeah, and then it also saves all those images also on the hard drive in case we ever need to go back and look at when, like, a check gets bounced out from the bank or...
I mean... It,
but the biggest thing is it saves a copy of the payment also to the tax account. So if there's any question as to how the account was paid in the future, the receipt has the check attached to it, which is...
So if someone comes in and is asking, you can quickly...
Yeah.
Go to a computer screen.
A lot of times people get confused.
Here's your check and here's your coupon and this is what happened.
Yeah. A lot of times people get confused because you pay 2018 taxes and 2019, and so they'll be like, they get confused on when and what they actually paid at what time. So it would be very beneficial to be able to show, here's your receipt, this was this check, here's your receipt, this was this check, but you still owe for this.
So all this is being done manually right now?
Yep. So currently we get the payment.
And then walk it down to the bank.
We have desktop deposits, so we don't walk it
send
down
it by
bank.
Carrier pigeon.
Smoke signal. We open the account and we manually enter the payments. We manually apply the receipt. We have not been able to scan the image into the system at this time. And then... after the employee gets all the payments made for that day, we can do, each person can do on average about $1 million in payments per day if that's all that they do. So then they get, you have a check, a stack of checks like this that you have to take over to the computer and do a desktop deposit into Wells Fargo, which takes a significant amount of time as well. So. Much more automated process.
Speaking with your other likes around the state, has there been much difficulty in implementing this software?
No, not at all.
It's pretty straightforward.
And some of the bigger counties.
Not too bad, huh?
No. Some of the bigger counties, the motor vehicle department actually has one also. And then they have one in the treasurer's office. So
you won't be asking for an additional FTE to manage this software.
No.
Good.
I mean, it doesn't, I don't want to say that it takes the spot of a person because it still has to be controlled by a person.
And no, I'm not talking about eliminating. I'm talking about not having additional ones.
I think
it's been our experience.
Yeah. He's been facetious.
I don't foresee that being a request. No.
Just wanted to get you on the record.
So will you clarify what the costs are? So there's a cost for scanners, but it looks like you already had some costs budgeted for scanners.
So there's a cost for the controllable scanner, which is the $3,125.
Okay.
That's the big scanner that can read the 3,000 documents. That's
right.
What you can load into that. The five additional desktop scanners are... I thought that we would need scanners if we were going to do payments at our desks to scan the check images. But after talking to Tyler, I asked if the scanners that we already have for Munis, the desktop scanners, would work for that. And they said that they think that they will. They're coming up. I have been requesting training since January, and originally they said that they would come up and do it, but it would be a cost at $255 an hour to do additional training. Well, they have agreed to come in December and do a day and a half of free training with my office, which is great and really exciting. So they're going to look at it at that point. I feel pretty certain that those scanners are going to be adequate, but I wanted to just put that money in there just in case that, that it ends up not working.
And then is there an ongoing cost for
software? So there is
software,
a maintenance to the software. So
okay.
The maintenance expense is...
Is that what's listed as scanner support on there, or is that different?
Yes, I don't know why that's listed as scanner support, but
okay.
That's what it is.
So that'll probably be an annual cost,
yes.
Then?
Yes.
That $49.75.
Yep.
Okay.
430 of that is for the scanner support, and the 4,500 is for the software maintenance, and that includes any upgrades. So if Tyler does any upgrades, then the Creditron also does the upgrades necessary to be compatible.
So in the background information, it talks about the automatic sweep of the funds into an interest-bearing account or an investment account, or in this case, a money market account. So that's something, I mean, we're not doing that anyway?
No, we haven't been doing that.
Because, I mean, does this software make it, is it somehow making it possible to do something that we're not capable of doing now?
I think the software, so I think in the past the philosophy has been, I guess two different banking philosophies, is to keep your balance high and earn money off your checking account that overrides your banking fees.
Correct, and you've changed that.
And so now my philosophy
is changed. We're getting more money now because we've got that money sitting in money market accounts rather than in the operating account.
So we're being a little bit more aggressive in the way that we invest our money and taking opportunities to do that. And so this is changing our bank account to not just a checking account. It's going to be a business interest-bearing account. And so it makes sense to have this Creditron to get the payments into the bank faster, because now we're going to be gaining more interest on the money. It's not going to be sitting in the bank account. Right now, I think we make 0.065% just sitting there. And so now we have the opportunity to make a higher interest rate while it transfers out into those money markets at night and then in the morning.
Because the money's getting over to the bank quicker than it used to.
Right. So if we can get, the faster we can get it into the bank, the faster it will be invested, and then we can earn money on the interest until we distribute it the 10th of the following month. So it's a whole new game now. The faster we can get the money into the bank is.
But I mean, we're getting it there one day faster?
Not necessarily. Right now, payments pack back up into our vault, and so there are times in the beginning of February that we could be 1 to 2 weeks behind.
Oh, okay.
And I really wanted to take some time and analyze that this year to see why it was, but we were 1 to 2 weeks behind, and that was coming in on Saturday and Sunday to process payments. And so that's been an issue in the office. As you can imagine, if you send your check in and you call to say, hey, I sent my check in last week, it hasn't hit my bank account yet, we organize the mail by the postmarked date. So we can say, okay, you sent it on Thursday, and we can go through the date, the postmark, and see if we have it. But it's not the best service that we're offering. It would be really nice to be able to get those payments in the day that we receive them and not have
depending on your perspective.
Yeah, not have any payments overflowing that we're keeping.
But so practically speaking, with the software, you'll be depositing every day.
Talking to some of the larger counties, they're able to get through everything they receive in the mail that day. So it gets receipted into the tax accounts and deposited into the bank account the same day that it's received, which is not something that we have ever been able to do.
I guess I didn't realize that we had. I just always assumed that we were making daily deposits.
We're making daily deposits, but we're not. We're not getting through everything we receive in
the
day. Yeah.
And this should easily cure that situation.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
How does the annual fee work? I mean, obviously, we're almost at the end of the year.
The reason why I'm asking for the budget for this year is it will be implemented January 1st.
Right.
So that would be when we're, but I have to pay for it up front, so.
But we're paying for a year from now, right? We're not paying for 2019.
No, as soon as it's implemented, we'll be paying for the year of 2020, not 2019.
Got it. But they'll let you start before that?
Yeah, well, the implementation takes about 60 days, so...
they don't give you the keys till the car's ready to run.
It's going
to
take a little
bit. Until you buy the car.
Until you buy the car.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit before it is up and running. My goal is to have it in the beginning part of January so we can do a little bit of testing before we get the big payments February 15th. So.
And this is a sole source because it's the only one that's compatible with Tyler. Is that right?
Their software is compatible with Tyler Eagle. It's the one that every county uses, so I'm assuming. I didn't want to reinvent the wheel when there was something that's been working well for everybody.
I guess my only question is, good for you finding it. Sorry that it took us so long to find it out that everybody else was using it and it was working so good. So, yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, I found out a lot of really awesome automations that our office could have been doing.
Yeah.
And I wish I would have found out about it before the budget process because it would have been...
I guess that was going to be my next question. I mean, you talk about the additional revenues, interest revenues. You probably have not budgeted those additional interest revenues in 2020.
No.
So really any kind of a positive budget variance because of
they're
this.
Not going to
yes.
do that much
in 2020.
Yeah.
A small positive budget variance.
Well, she stays. I think you're saying that it will pretty much pay for itself.
Yeah. I mean, it should pay for itself within the first 3 days.
So with any kind of luck, we'll have a positive budget variance in 2020 that will offset this supplemental budget in 2019.
Right, exactly. Okay. Yeah.
And even then, so...
It's just not that much money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's better than hauling gold bullion.
For all the good that it offers, I feel like it's a very reasonable amount of money to spend. It solves a lot of problems.
You'll save money on carrier pigeons.
Jump in, sorry.
Yes.
You
don't have to apologize.
So Lane and I were talking about this request before she submitted it, and I just want to put it on the record that this is like maybe the classic example of priority-based budgeting, and put it on record because, this is someone who's gone out, used her network to research and, identified a practice that could improve, identified the way to do it and move forward to implement it, and that will result in a better outcome for our taxpayers and for residents and of the county, will result in her staff being able to do other things with that time. And, obviously, if we, based on what she's saying, it should pay for itself in 3 days, right? These are things that, I think one of you just said, like, we should have been doing this, right? So it's an example that I think we can use with other staff and other departments, to model that kind of change in the way we execute our programs.
Thank you. Yes.
I don't have any other questions. Anyone else?
I'm good.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the supplemental budget request for the purchase of a tax remittance processing solution compatible with the Tyler Eagle Treasurer in the amount of $27,397 and authorized to the Commissioner's signature on such.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thanks, Lane.
Thank you.
So,
yes, ma'am.
Okay. Okay. So we are having discussion on land dedication standards for schools and parks and the associated fee in lieu dedication. So we have the packet. We've read it. I am certain. But if you want to give us your presentation, that would be great.
Okay. So this discussion is to address Section 352 and 353 of the subdivision regulations, which, like you said, addresses land dedication and fees in lieu of dedication for proposed subdivisions. The county is enabled to collect these or is required by state statute and... Those sites and lands for schools and parks are required when such are reasonably necessary to serve the proposed subdivision and the future residents thereof. And so our current regulations may not be consistent with this statute because our regulations reference fire stations or other necessary public facilities. And so I know at the last hearing we told you that we were close to, or that we had made proposed changes to the regulations, but based on comments from the board at that hearing, we decided we wanted to take a step back and make sure that our assumptions that the board made 15 years ago when they put these in place were still consistent with the current board's desires. And so that basically comes down to determination of the formula for how much land is going to be required, and then determining the value of the land if a fee in lieu is going to be collected. So on page 6 of the communication form, there are 4 questions that staff is hoping to get answers to so that we can move forward on this on this change, and those 4 questions are listed up on the screen right now. And so those are who should initially determine the impacts of parks and schools and what the resulting land dedication should be, what factors should be used in determining the value of the land, who should be responsible for determining the value of the land, and how should the administration of the fees be addressed. So staff came up with 3 possible scenarios for determining the land calculation, and then we provided what staff's preferred option would be. And that, so the 3 different options are to determine the formula up front and include it in the regulations. Second, to make the school district or the parks department provide the recommendation and rationale for how much land is needed. And then the third option would be to allow the developer to conduct their own study. And we would like to stress that third option, some form of that third option needs to be included just in case the developer disagrees with either the county's determination or the school district's determination, so that it just gives them the ability to challenge it. So that a provision such as that should be included regardless of who makes that initial determination. And so staff's preferred option would be for the county to determine the formula and include it in the regulations. This is how staff has, or that's how the regulations have been written and how it was enforced on the Fox Grove subdivision application and all subsequent subdivision applications. And this would, the reason that staff chose this option is because then the county would be enforcing a study that was prepared by staff. If the county relied on the school district to determine that calculation, then the county would be tasked with enforcing a study that was conducted by the school district. And if the applicant disagrees with that, then the county would be brought into those discussions. And then it also provides a level of predictability that the applicant can rely on when they're moving forward with an application. And then it also allows it keeps these negotiations within the county process. If the school district was allowed to provide that determination, then the negotiation would be with the school district and the applicant outside of the county process. So I figured we would address each one of these one by one and then circle back around and see if there's any that affect the other. So I was thinking we could talk about this one before moving on to land value calculation.
I have a question. If we already have a formula, then, I mean, I see under your cons the preparation of a nexus study. So we would need to redo the formula. Is the way it was done not defensible or no longer relevant? What's the situation with that?
I would say that it's not arbitrary because we reached out to, it was Pascal in this instance in the RE2 to get their determination of how much land they need per population. So the Nexus study would be more or less a continuation of that countywide because we were only focusing on one piece of land, one school district. So does that apply to RE1 and RE3?
So before we go that far into this thing, I'd like to hear from our attorney, but required that land dedication standards are required by Colorado revised statute.
I had a similar question about that because it says that we determine when it's reasonably necessary. I mean, so what?
You don't know the answer to that?
I don't know the answer to that. I guess honestly, just from a logical standpoint, it seems like something that was less than a certain size or created less than a certain number of units, you would just say, we're not even going to bother, right? And that you could call that not reasonably necessary, that there might be some other things to consider in that. I don't know. I don't know if that's... It seems like a similar question to what Doug's asking.
I don't think there's a limit on what could be considered to lead you to determine that the requirement is not reasonably necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Let me take a step back, and I thought you might have this concern, Doug.
I thought we were kind of acquiescing. Well,
my question is why are we here? I mean, we've had the discussion about the broader need to address our development code, including exactions.
Yeah.
This is a very small piece to that. And why are we addressing it here today? Based on board direction, we still have all of the other conversations, including master plan, including impacts to fires, need for fire stations, and all the other improvements that developers are probably responsible for. Those are discussions that still are going to take place. So this, again, is a very, very narrow discussion because there's a fee already in our books that needs to be addressed and fixed, if you will, to comport with not only state law, but other sort of exaction requirements. Think Coons, Nolan, Dolan, etc.
Right, yeah.
And so... what we do know is that there is a statute that mandates, and the word is shall, that is used within the statute, requires the county to get a land dedication for schools and parks. Again, a very, very narrow area of developmental concerns.
In a few words with a broad meaning.
Yeah, and then we get into if such are reasonably necessary, and who knows what that means. I think, at least in theory, there could be a finding by this board or another that a particular development, due to its nature, where it is, the size of it, again, innumerable factors, that the fee or the land dedication is not reasonably necessary. I have a very hard time putting... corners around that of what that means, but I could fathom a development and application that comes forward where that could be a question, and that would be a very legitimate finding in the record that the development land dedication or fee in lieu thereof is not reasonably necessary, and then you're done, right? At that point the statute allows for that, but because of the mandate we're left with trying to find out, well, what type of land dedication or how much of a land dedication is required. And Alan and the planning department have looked to other jurisdictions, numerous counties, and we've had several meetings of late to talk about how to do that.
best according to the statute, and that's what's being that's what's in front of us today. So you would have that full panoply of options. In other words, say zero, because they're not reasonably necessary, up to whatever. And then how do you get to that whatever is what's being discussed today.
But I would say if you're going to say that it's not reasonably necessary, that's on a case-by-case basis. So I think that would most likely be a decision on that particular application where a finding is made that because of its small size, it's not reasonably necessary, and then you can waive it at that during the application process, not during the
as a finding of fact,
yeah. And
which would then still comply with our shall.
Yeah,
correct. And so these regulations that we're talking about right now would bring the county into compliance with that shall, but then upon further review of this specific application, we find it unreasonable to require that land dedication.
I have a couple of questions about the statute, and I, without reading the statute, I'm just looking at what you guys included in the background information. The statute states that at a minimum, you shall have these provisions. So when it says at a minimum, is there some way to construe what might be able to take place above and beyond the minimum?
Yeah, there's no suggestion to you that there is a limitation on the types of impacts where an exaction can be levied. Like I've said before, we're still going to have those conversations about those limits or minimums even, right?
Well, the reason I asked the question about the minimum, because it goes to my next question, which is this is really just about land.
Well, the statute starts with a land dedication, but then it provides that that a fee can be charged in lieu of the land dedication.
So would the fee that's being charged in lieu of land dedication be restricted for the use of purchasing land somewhere else to provide for a school or a park site?
No, the statute talks about capital improvements.
Yeah, okay. It does say capital.
I was just hoping, I mean, that's why we were able to distribute the money to the school districts for their various projects. I just wanted to make sure that we had...
It says capital outlay purposes, development of sites, growth-related planning functions.
Yes.
Okay, and then my third question is, the thrust of what you guys have presented to us here today is talking about schools.
Schools and parks.
Since we have a robust parks department.
Because that's the minimum required through the statute.
But I think to Tim's point, we were only talking about schools. We're really not talking about how accommodations or whatever it is impacts the parks,
we're
right?
We're talking about how to calculate whatever this is going to be. It's being calculated upon school costs, in essence, or needs of schools.
So what we've gotten so far is really a number of acres per population. So
I understand, but I'm perfectly happy to just talk about schools or schools and parks. Can we reasonably say that the value of the need for a park is the same as the value of the need for a school? And intuitively, it seems like the needs of the schools would be much more expensive than the needs of a park.
So initially, it says land. How much land is going to be dedicated?
Okay.
And so through our research, we've realized that those standards are different based on speaking with Pascal at the school district, their needs per their number of acres per 1,000 residents is different versus a park's need for a number of acres per 1,000 residents.
It would be different than Sirocco, especially with where Hayden, when Steamboat has a policy of only 20 kids per class, then their need might be greater than an adjoining school district that doesn't have that policy.
So I guess, I mean, Tim sort of asked this question, but I think this is, so it says schools and parks. It doesn't say schools or parks. So do we feel like basing this around school district calculations and money being sent to the school districts fulfills our obligation?
So I think we're going to have to do it. We're going to have to analyze the school district as well as the parks, and then we'll have to come back and say, since we don't have a parks department, the effect on the parks department is zero. And
or a finding about reasonable necessity. Where some of the confusion lies is that there were monies being held by the county that needed to be released after years of collecting this thing, and so the determination by this board and staff, I think, was that it was most appropriate to be sent out to the school districts upon application and then used pursuant to the statute, again because of the reasonably necessary standard. We're now basically starting from scratch. We don't have that problem anymore of the money sitting in the bank. We're now dealing with this regulation change, and you're right, Commissioner Melton, that it has to address both schools and parks. But the developments will vary, right? Each one, there will never be a cookie cutter development out there in Round County, I don't think. And so one, again, this is just hypothetically, extremely large development could come in where there's no open space, no HOA-owned open space or green space or whatever else.
Yeah, we could have another Steamboat 2 come in.
And this board might feel, well, then a parks dedication is necessary. Mm-hmm. And you'll address that at that point. That's very rare, you know, but you're going to have most likely a subdivision application where that there is green space, and this board may find, okay, you've met the requirements of quote-unquote parks while there's no land dedication to a park
department
entity, but your open space dedication is sufficient to meet that. Now we're going to focus in on schools. So each one will vary, but the regulations themselves have to deal with both.
So, if I understand it correctly, what you're proposing under your option one, which is where we come up with something, it's a blanket nexus study that we can apply to any given property as they come up.
Yes, yeah, so rather than on a case by nexus study,
rather than on a case by case basis.
So, can I go back to my original question, which is why do we need to redo the nexus study? I think I know the answer, but
it would make it more countywide. We said before it was just specific to RE1.
And to schools, right?
Well, no.
You worked with Pascal on it.
Right.
He's not a parks.
Right. But there was also, I worked with at the time, John Overstreet, and there's some information from DOLA that basically came to the same conclusion as Steamboat, acres needed per population. So it was the same formula for parks as opposed to schools. But it would just be applying that countywide. I mean, it was kind of easy in that instance because it was pretty safe to guess that the people in Fox Grove would be using housing. But what if you live in Moon Hill? You know, it's that's where things get a little.
So, are you proposing that you would have regions of the county that this would be divided up into, or
what
are you guys looking at? Okay.
You know, do we just take that DOLA number because it's out of a report for rural communities? You know, at least it would probably start there.
So practically speaking, I can, it's easy enough, as, and like you said, you did with Pascal, come up with a formula for a school district. You know, you can count the number of additional kids based on the number of additional units that are likely to be created and do the division and come up with so many square feet per student and come up with a cost per square foot for land that you might need to purchase. Is there a similar standard or a way of calculating that for parks?
Yes.
That's what you said.
You right. have that.
Yeah. And we came up with that formula. And like I said, it was based off of this DOLA study and what the city requires.
But so compared to like a full-blown, I mean, not that this isn't full-blown, I guess, but compared to the Nexus study stuff that we were talking about a few weeks ago, I mean, this is relatively simple and low cost, right? I mean, we're not talking about a huge undertaking for this.
Yeah, purpose. That's my concern. We're going to front the money for the Nexus study. It's all out of our pocket, and we don't get none of it.
Well, I think the...
Well, they can do it on the back of a staff
will do it.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's what I was
clarifying. So we're not going to have it farmed out.
Well, again, we're talking about two different things going on here. I don't care for the term Nexus study where this is concerned, the statutory-driven exaction, right? The statute doesn't tell us how to do it is the problem. So we need to develop a way to do it.
Right.
For the purposes of that statute alone. All of the other development impacts and associated requirements, exactions, fees, whatever you want to call it, will have to be supported by a larger Nexus study. And that, again, that's for future discussion. And I'm going to suggest to you probably at some point that that should be farmed out and a consultant hired in order to do that correctly. But those are all different because there's not a statutory basis necessarily for all of those things. So, again, we're focusing on the statute.
So even though the staff information uses the term Nexus study, we shouldn't necessarily think of it as being the same as the Nexus studies.
It just lends to this confusion of I thought we were talking about X, Y, or Z.
Okay.
And, again, planning has looked at various jurisdictions on how they're doing this, you know, dealing with this particular statute. And there is quite a bit of variability out there, actually. And I think that, what you're going to hear is where...
Yeah.
Would a future, more robust exaction study obviate the need to address this statute if it was properly built?
What I've seen is that I'll call them the more broader group of Nexus studies that I have seen in Colorado do take into consideration this statute.
So we might be more dealing with a short-term fix here.
Could be, yes.
Okay.
Well, I guess we ought to probably not think about it that way.
Right.
We think we're fixing the deal. I mean, it's probably a menu. What we're Nexus people, and you know, how many parts do you want to answer? Transportation, water and sewer, and schools and parks and all that stuff.
No, I agree. If we're going to fix this at all, let's fix it right.
Yeah.
So and deal with this, like Erica says, this very narrow issue that's in front of us right now.
Agreed.
So it doesn't feel that narrow. But.
So how are we going to talk about the parks and rest and you know, the variability about size of things, too? I mean, I understand. I mean, it seems kind of black and white about the school district, I think, too. And the numbers are pretty black and white on the probably black and white on the parks as well. So if you're adding X number of people, you probably have X number of square feet that you need to have for parks availability. It's probably black and white numbers. So
yeah.
The Nexus is something you guys can download out of various textbooks or whatever, I assume.
Right, done already. Yeah.
The more difficult will be the next step, and I don't want to steal your thunder, Alan, but putting a value to that square footage is going to be the harder part.
Mm-hmm. I think it seems fine to have the staff do the work on this and determine the formula and include it in the regulations. Although it sounds like there's a possibility there could be more than one formula at the end of that, but I assume that you're leaving that depending on the location and whether you're talking about parks or schools or whatever.
So you've worked with a different multiplier.
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking at least two different calculations, one for parks and one for schools.
Right.
And then depending on how our research with RE1 and 3 goes, the school's calculation might result in...
3 chairs.
It could, yeah. It could.
So what do we do about parks when we don't have anybody to even give the money to?
Or the land.
And that might be the finding.
We're just talking about the land right now.
Or the fee in lieu or the land.
That could be the finding in the application,
that it's not reasonably necessary to require parks.
Which would
this
be the findings.
Yeah.
Well, let's not waste any time building a formula for it.
Well, but we have to address it in the regulations.
In case we do have something that comes in, like another steamboat, too.
Or stagecoach.
If we do the 300 acres on the South Shore, you know, the Stallings, whenever we get that application.
So, yeah, we would want to know how many acres of park space that they would want to have for that 300 acres.
Yeah.
We even know it's already zoned. I guess my other question is how does this work with, I mean, this is the subdivision regulations. How does that work with my favorite PUDs, the rest?
There's a reference in the PUD regulations to this section of the subdivision regulations.
So the PUD would require it as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
So if we were really just talking about land rather than capital improvements within a given area, say one of the school district areas, why would the value of school land be any different than the value of parkland? It's just land.
I don't know if I followed.
So we're worried about having two different tiers, one for parklands or one for school lands.
So this would just be determining how much land needs to be dedicated.
So if we're ready to move to the next
question. The dollars per acre would be presumably the same.
Well, that's... Yeah. Do you want to move us to...
Tiers,
it sounds like we're ready
to might have
to
a tier for the three different school
getting
districts
ahead of ourselves.
And then also have the same for the parks land as well, I would imagine.
So it sounds like we're in agreement that having staff calculate the amount of land required, and then the next step is to talk about the value of that land and how we figure that out if someone were paying a fee in lieu of the land dedication, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so do you want to just walk us through that real quick, and maybe some of our questions will get answered before we derail on that?
Yes, so... The statute allows, so once you determine how much land needs to be dedicated, then the determination of whether it's actually feasible to dedicate that land or a fee in lieu of dedication will be required. So if the fee in lieu is required, then we have to figure out what you base that fee on, and that's the value of the land. And so... The statute allows the county to collect the land after it's been subdivided and improved. So there are different options provided for determining that land value, and the one that staff prefers is the value based on platted and improved land. And so there are other options that include... determining a land value based on zone district and just including that in the regulations, which I have seen from other municipalities. Collecting the fee based on the value of the land after it's platted, base the value on the land before it's platted, basing the value on unimproved land, so before it has been subdivided and infrastructure installed. And then the last option would be to base it on the value of the land that parks and schools could actually be built upon. And that was the argument that was used by the applicant in Fox Grove. They were saying, why should the value be based on my land when the school is going to go and buy land outside of town that is presumably less expensive than the land that was being subdivided. And so staff's preferred option is that it is based on platted and improved land, and that's based on the fact that the statute allows for the county to collect land after it's been subdivided and improved, and then the statute then allows the county to be able to sell that land at fair market value. And again, this was the stance that was, or the the factors that we use in calculating the land value in Fox Grove, and so it's the one that staff prefers.
When I had come up with those initial numbers for Fox Grove, even I had a bit of sticker shock, because we were used to the $1,400 per, or maybe some other argument that the applicant would give us, and in Fox Grove those came in at like $10,000 or $12,000.
So what is the requirement? Like 5% or something like that? What is?
Well, that's where, back to the first conversation. That's where the 5% was the old regs based on nothing. So we're getting rid of that.
Okay, the 5% is going.
Yes, it's that acres needed per population.
Oh, okay. Schools. So then we come up with those acres, okay, and then we're trying to figure out that value.
Can I clarify one thing? Just back up just a little bit. Are we still going to allow for the developer, if they has a large enough piece of property, to dedicate land? That's still going to be possible to do. And what is that threshold?
It's the same thing. It's that how much land per population.
And if there's not enough then we move on to the fee.
Yeah.
Or he can even donate what he's got and come up with the difference of the fee, probably, even could he?
Yeah, combinations are allowed by statute.
Yeah. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it can't be a fee in lieu if it's not in lieu of anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to have the option available.
What's the minimum possible size for a park?
They can be very, very small.
Yeah like tot lots or like a tenth of an acre, maybe.
I mean, I think part of the point is, on a case-by-case basis, you're determining what's reasonably necessary for the development, right? I mean, we just have to address it in our regulations appropriately.
So, again, it looks like in this question here that you're asking, there's more than one question. There's the first question that, the platted and improved, the value of the platted and improved land. But mm-hmm. So then it goes back to the Fox Grove or whatever, number six, then again. Those two can be in conflict.
We're supposed to choose one of these six.
Yeah, because
how we're going to calculate
right.
the value of that land.
Because that was Bob Weiss's argument when he was in front of you.
No, I understand.
And that was, why should basically the rich people pay more than the not as rich people when a student's a student?
Progress.
And so that's why they were focused on the Stagecoach land, or Stagecoach, Steamboat 2 land, and then, what we eventually came up with was something more along those lines, but it was land in the area.
Does anybody do that, number six? I mean, did you find other counties that calculated? I mean, that just seems crazy in terms of trying to figure it out.
Not if each school district had a capital improvement plan in place with identified potential properties and costs associated with them.
But what about parks?
I think I'm still hung up. If we're going to allow developers to dedicate a certain piece of land that would be based upon how much land would be needed for a park, they would always be better off to actually give that land right up front as part of the subdivision rather than waiting to pay a fee based upon the platted and improved value.
Other than that, if you get one of the subdivisions that we've had are one or two lots, one lot.
Well, that's why I brought up the concept of the threshold. A school is always going to need 8, 9, 10 acres.
But should they get
a park? Could be a postage stamp.
And then
if I'm the developer, I'm saying I'm giving you this lousy little piece of land over.
But
here.
We've had that in the past, and we've said, well, that was not of count. Was not going to count because it was so small it couldn't be used.
But we're going to have a method that comes up. So, for instance, let's say we have a 10-acre or a 10-lot subdivision. You have 10 houses. There's some kind of a formula that exists right now that's easy enough to come up with standards that would show how big of a piece of land you would need to serve a 10-lot subdivision, right? And it could be, you might be able to come up with something that's actually big enough on that subdivision to satisfy that. You're never going to come up with a school site. That's never going to happen.
But let's go down smaller. Right. How about two lots? What do you do with parks then?
Tiny park. You can have a park back with a tree and a water fountain.
I don't think we have to go through all these hypotheticals. I mean, the point is we come up with a regulation, and then on a case-by-case basis we can evaluate if it's reasonably necessary. And I mean, like Eric said, we could consider the dedication of open space to meet the requirements of a park, too, which
would be far less expensive for the developer than actually paying the fee in lieu.
But they could choose to do that. I mean, unless we said, sorry, that's not enough.
And that was their original Fox Grove proposal. Is their little buffer strip, which was met their open space requirement.
Which was unusable anyhow.
Right. So. They wanted to dedicate it because it had a little unimproved path through it.
Right.
But nobody's going to accept it.
But so that's where we evaluate it on a case-by-case basis. I think you should do number one. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I just want to keep us out of court.
Yeah.
I don't want to get... I think we want predictability. That's what we're aiming for, and we want to have some...
Well, if you really wanted to stay out of court, you got to pick number five. Because that's even Steven. It's like land or money, but they're both the same value.
Well, but Alan's point was that one is justifiable because if they're dedicating the land, they dedicate it after it's platted and improved, and we could sell it. And so that's the fair value.
Five's out of the question, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm fine with number one.
I guess I'll for that. I guess I'm not in full agreement with the staff. But it's not my call.
Doesn't mean we don't want your opinion.
So, thank you.
Before we ignore it.
22 Alan's list, though, the cons, the last one is what you're talking about. It's greater chance of dispute. And looking at what the various counties that Alan looked at have done, you know, they certainly include value of land platted and improved, and then Garfield County market value based on unimproved land. And when I first reviewed these with Alan and Chad and Linnea, that one struck me as at least my preferred. I don't read the statute to say that the land is held somewhere, and then once improvements occur, the plat and improvements, then it's transferred to the county.
Yeah.
I don't read it that way. I think that's, well, I just try to think of the two extremes. One and the other are probably unreasonable at the ends of the spectrum, and this is one that's clearly on that end of the spectrum. And whereas if you just say based on unimproved land entirely, you have the other side of the spectrum too. So I guess my suggestion is if we have a value that's somewhere in between is probably the safest and most justifiable means. What I'm worried about happening, quite frankly, and in context of the past applications, you're going to get a very large number if a fee is calculated from this. And my guess is it's going to result in a dispute, but I also guess that this board is probably going to find that that's not reasonable. And why start with something that's not reasonable?
Using your logic, number five makes the most sense.
Well, there's more considerations to come.
That's not what he said. I think he said that we'd pick the top and the bottom and we'd go to the middle.
Logically thinking about it, to me, it's either you transfer this chunk of land, which is my option to do, or I transfer the value of that chunk of land.
Right. The platted piece, though, makes some sense to me, or makes a lot of sense to me, actually, because it's going to have to be platted. But it's the improved piece that really, when you add the cost of infrastructure, you're really, really
increasing
the cost of the value of the dedicated land, which will translate into an extremely large fee, in my opinion. So if you did a hybrid of sorts, platted but unimproved, that
like
might
number
get you
three.
Agree.
By the way, what's the difference between number four and number five?
So number four is just the raw land before it actually gets subdivided.
So which is the same as number five?
Well, the number five would be platted, but infrastructure not installed.
Platted and approved as well. Because like, I mean, you'd have
but that would be the same as three or not. I don't know if it really matters.
You know what? I don't know. We have to decide that today. I mean, it'd probably be helpful for us to see what dollar wise what those differences might make to address Eric's concern.
Okay.
What do you think we're going to see, though? I mean, I guess I don't, because it's going to be dependent on the piece of land.
We could use some. They could use some hypothetical examples of a 10 lot subdivision with a value of X number of dollars per acre or per square foot or whatever you want to use. And if we use this one method, the fee would be $3,000. And we use the other method, it'll be $30,000.
I don't feel like I need to see that, personally. Okay. I mean, I think Eric made a compelling argument about why we wouldn't want to include the value of the improvements, but that we would want it to be platted. I guess I would ask if Alan or Chad, if you would have any concerns about that.
I agree with Eric. I mean, we kind of took the black and white approach, what would most closely resemble the statute, but Eric's right. You know, we saw that in Fox Grove. There's a sticker shock associated with that, especially compared to what we have been assessing.
So, but the land is not worth anything if it doesn't have any improvements on it. Who's going to improve it?
Well, what if it's just a park?
Well, if you take the
value, they wouldn't need the improvements.
Yeah,
right?
They do. They need water, and they need. Yeah,
I would see three values. So that would be, you know, the value of
transportation
just
to
pre-application. Yeah. Let's say just the raw land. And then there would be a value. So if somebody, like we saw in Silver Spur, when they subdivided that land, they sold it. And then somebody else came in. Same thing with Blacktown Stagecoach. And so that had a value unimproved. And then the biggest value would be subdivided and improved.
So depending on what happens. So if they dedicate the land, then we don't have to worry about the value, right?
Right.
A value's off the table. But it's when they say, the developer says, when we're talking about the fee, then we have to value it. And this is just all we're talking about is
how we evaluate,
how to do the valuation piece to it. So it's not in reality what would occur, which is what you're talking about. It's just determining the value of the raw, or excuse me,
the land.
Fine, let's move on with platted and unapproved.
Platted and approved. Okay.
Doug?
I think some hybrid somewhere in the middle could be. I'm all right. Let's see.
And unapproved, I said. That is.
No, I got it. No, it is. No.
That's the one that's in the middle. Platted and improved is the...
It's the top, right.
Top.
Before planning.
Raw land is on the bottom. And what we chose is kind of in the middle.
Right. Well, and...
Platted and unimproved.
Great. Okay, I know you have one more.
All right.
Let's keep...
And then the last one is... So we've determined the factors that are taken into consideration when determining the value. Now, who actually determines that value? Currently, we allow the landowner to provide their estimate of what the value of the land would be, and then we base the calculations off of that. Other counties I've seen require the applicant to provide an appraisal of it. The county obtains an appraisal. Both the applicant and the county get an appraisal, and then an average of those two are taken. And then I've also seen use of a documented purchase price to determine that value. So...
Why can't you use the assessor's value?
Because I don't. The assessor's value is based on the raw land,
and it might not be current.
No.
I mean, it has to be within the last 2 years.
But that
for the raw land, which is what we just said we wanted to base the value on.
But not sub. You said you wanted it subdivided.
Got it.
Okay. And that probably wouldn't erase the dispute.
Right.
What, by using the assessor?
Correct.
No, I can't imagine that would
be a
dispute.
I mean, the thing that makes the most sense is to hire an appraiser and have the
developer. We hire an appraiser?
Have the developer pay for the appraiser and have the appraiser pick from a pre-approved list. Could we create a pre-approved list of appraisers?
Ooh, very difficult.
Okay.
Or just provide standards that they have to be certified
in the state of Colorado.
I mean, that's the simplest path to pursue is have the developer hire a certified appraiser. That's the price is what the price is.
It's just adding a lot of cost for them. I don't know how you get around that, but like if we're talking about a situation where the subdivision is so small that a dedication of land isn't warranted and they have to pay a fee in lieu of the dedication of land, and then you add the cost for an appraisal on top of that, it seems like it starts to get burdensome really quickly, like unnecessarily burdensome. I don't know how you get around that, though.
Well, I don't know what we're talking about. Are we talking about a full-blown appraisal? Are we talking about...
Yeah, I don't know.
You know...
Well, there's some, based on experience again, we need something more than just an opinion of value, because I can hire any realtor within the county to give me whatever number I want them to give
right.
me.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I see your point, Commissioner Melton. I would say invariably the counties that have done this, it's, again, only if there's a dispute in value. Then the appraisal is paid for by the applicant. That's Pitkin County, does it that way. Garfield had just had the appraisal paid by the school district, which that didn't seem wholly enforceable.
No.
So we would allow for the developer to present their opinion of value, and that planning department could look at that and say, yeah, that looks about right, and we accept that and we move on. Or planning department could say, no, you need to go back to the drawing board.
The one I liked, I was just trying to give you some... I like this because this is where I would see a judge land, and that is Graham County says if it's a mutually agreed upon appraiser that does it, that, and it's paid by the applicant. So,
but there's an appraisal in every case.
No, only if disputed.
So only if there's a dispute in the value.
Correct.
Sorry, I thought you said
value.
So if there's a dispute, so then. The two parties mutually agree upon an appraiser, and whatever that appraiser says goes. But
the dispute would be between the applicant and the planning department, is what you're talking about.
Yes.
We're going to end up having to pay for it.
And they can work back and forth and hopefully arrive at a mutually agreeable value before the county planning department says, well, go get an appraisal. We're not talking to you.
Sure, that's always the hope.
I'm okay with that. I mean, if there's an opportunity for people to not have to pay for an appraisal, then I feel okay with that. I just wouldn't want to require every single person
only,
to have
only
to have
a dispute.
I feel okay about that.
So again, their last discussion was going to be platted and unimproved, and that platted comes with entitlements, and so we're
and value.
And value that hypothetical will have to be valued in the appraisal as well as the platting itself has value.
Yes, but there are comps out there, plenty of them.
That would be
right value, yes.
Do you guys feel okay with that?
Yeah, no, I'm good. Let's move forward and see where the hell it goes.
By the way, have we decided what we're going to do with consolidations?
Is this part of the discussion?
Well,
it's not on the list.
It wasn't intended to be.
I mean,
so I think the answer is no, is what it sounds like now.
I mean, is there any way to apply this new logic to a consolidation?
You know, but we can include that. It's just where we were, you know, it had to do with, you know, whether it was reasonably necessary per application. You know, and I think the finding that you made from that last stagecoach consolidation,
it was not
pretty clear.
Okay, that's fine.
That makes sense. Did you want to talk
so
about...
So we need it more black and white than that? Then. I think that's where he's at.
Well, because part
I just want to make sure we're clear on where we're headed to.
Part of what you guys have talked about is the importance of predictability to the developer. So when they walk in the door, they pretty much, they're looking at a formula. They know what they're up against. It's going to cost me X.
So the other thing is we could say that the lot consolidation is not a subdivision.
I'm ready to go there.
I'm fine with that, too. I mean, we...
So it sounds like you guys haven't done any work specifically on consolidation, but will you take a look at whether that would be possible to just make a statement that a consolidation is not a subdivision? And then
we say so, it's possible.
Well, it's possible, Tim, but that doesn't make it a good idea. We want someone to take a look at unintended consequences.
We can get there. I don't know that.
Intuitively, it makes sense. Yes, to not impose this upon consolidation.
I don't know that I'd mess with the definition of subdivision, but there are other ways around having a fee or
just take a look at that. So you had one other piece about administration fees, Alan. Were you wanting to talk to that about that?
Yeah. So okay. I guess there were three different options for the administration of the fees, and these all came from other counties addressing this. And so that would be the fees paid directly to the affected entity, the school board or the parks department. The fee is collected by the county and then distributed while the county collects an administration fee, and then the fee is collected by the county and distributed without collecting an administration fee.
And three is what we have been doing.
Correct. And the fees that I saw in other counties were like 1%.
Minimal.
Yeah, pretty minimal.
I think we should do number one if we can. I mean, is there a problem with doing that? Because then we don't have this whole thing where we have to send them.
We want to make sure it gets collected first.
Okay.
If we're signing all the papers and the rest, we want to make sure it gets paid, that we still run the boat.
I mean, you could put a condition of approval, say proof that the fee in lieu has been paid shall be submitted prior to...
I guess my question goes back to, and while the administration fee and the rest, I'm still concerned about what happens if we end up having this, half the cost of the appraisal. Is that, could be included in the fees?
Oh, sorry, Doug. I thought where we landed was mutually agreed upon appraiser paid by the applicant.
Okay. It wasn't clear to me. No.
That's if there's a disagreement.
Only if there's a
disagreement. Only if there's a disagreement.
Yeah. Okay.
The issue that I have with number two, I'm trying to speed up for their sake.
You're right.
Is that there's a provision in the statute that says any monies received by the county are not county revenues. And while an administration fee makes sense, I would worry that that's precluded by statute.
I don't need to.
Yeah, I don't need the money either. I just want it to be.
So you want to keep doing what we've been doing then in terms of number three?
I'm okay with that.
I guess I'm all right after Alan said number one. I'd be all right with number one or number three. I don't think we need the administration fee. You know?
I'm just thinking about the headache. I mean, it wasn't crazy, but it took multiple years, right, to get the letter out to the school districts and then get them to respond and then make sure that what they were doing was okay. And I mean, just like, why? Why do we care?
It was because we collected it under some...
Right.
Nefarious.
That sounds pretty
cool. The worst case scenario is we're providing some small subsidy to the school districts.
For the administration. Yeah, but why can't they just get the check in the mail? Why do we care?
Well, I guess the other thing is just to make sure that it just applies to get applied to capital items and
does go
into the just the fund and then make sure
it gets
applied to the right places.
And in terms of parks, let's say we added on to Steamboat 2. Does the money go to the Steamboat 2 or... Maybe if the city says, hey, every one of these kids is going to be using house and we should get the money. That way you guys can decide.
Well, I imagine that the application is going to happen. I mean, when we review the applications, it's going to
so
be determined.
So by virtue of collecting money, holding on to it, and then handing it out with conditions protects us liability-wise for ensuring that the money is being spent the correct way.
I could make an argument that the opposite is true, in that the less involvement of the county, the less liability to the county. The paid directly to the school district in which the subject property
is located
has an intuitive appeal to me.
Okay.
How do we?
I don't really care that much. It's legal liability that I would care about.
What would we need to do to ensure the school districts or the parks, whatever entity that might be, would know what this money was meant? I mean, the statutory requirements of what the money is for and why it was coming to them.
It's a great question. I think the devil's in the details. They could get a notice from the county or the applicant themselves. Hopefully they will have done their own research and have their own attorney advising them again as to their own liability if they misuse the funding.
And at that point, that's their problem, not ours.
We'll be involved in the lawsuit, but we'll hopefully be able to point a finger. press.
Yeah, I'm all right either way. I don't think it's fair to say what we've been doing the last 15 years is the right way or the wrong. We know that it's the wrong way. I don't think it's fair to say that it would continue on if we collected the money now. I think we would send it right back out whenever we got it collected, but I'm all right with it having paid directly to the entity, too.
I think pay directly to the entity and have some kind of proof that it's been paid is the most straightforward way to do it, in my opinion.
All right.
Is that it?
All right, that's it.
Nice.
Right.
Damn, that was fun.
Super fun.
By the way, that was a good memo. That was,
you guys did nice work.
Easy to understand. You knew what you were headed for. Thanks for
that. All right. Hey, thanks for the feedback.
Thank you.
For the feedback.
Come on up, Scott.
All right, thanks.
Carrie and Sarah, please come up as part of the project management team. Thank you. And I know you have to leave early.
Right.
Shall we begin? Okay. In a Board of County Commissioners meeting held on September 17th, 2019, commissioners expressed support for development of a climate action and resiliency plan in partnership with the City of Steamboat Springs. The intent of this meeting is to update the board on the status of the plan or status of plan development and also confirm which member of the board will sit on the oversight committee. Originally, this time was set aside for consideration for submittal of a DOLA grant, a technical assistance grant. Commissioner Melton thought it would be good to update the board on where we're at with the planning for the climate action plan, and that we put the and depending on the outcome of this meeting, put the DOLA grant on the consent agenda for the 19th. So. With that,
so we don't know anything about the DOLA grant, so you're going to tell us about that?
I will.
Yeah, I thought that if we just talked about the DOLA grant, we would get distracted by wanting to know where we were with the climate action plan. So I suggested that we talk about the plan first and the grant.
And that's
great. The
role
of the grant in the plan.
Okay, so following that meeting, I got together with Winnie Della Quadri, who was going to be here, but I think got sucked into doing something else. Met with her preliminarily and started talking about structure and project management. And then we decided on a project management team and then got together and have met a couple times about finalizing project management structure. And so that's kind of what I have here. First, there's an oversight committee. That oversight committee would consist of elected officials from the city and county. I got in touch with people from Yampa and Oak Creek and Hayden who've committed folks to be on that oversight committee. And I believe Sonia is representing City of Steamboat, and then the county just has to decide who would represent from the board. And we've had some of those discussions already. I think maybe Beth wasn't here on the 27th. Tim wasn't here, okay. So anyway, we can do that. The project management team consists of four people, myself, Sarah, John Bristol from the Chamber, and Winnie Della Quadri. It was very intentional. Sarah has a long history and background with these types of plans and now represents the Steamboat Ski Resort, whom we've requested some funding from to help support the plan. Of course, Winnie and I represent the city and the county, and then John Bristol. And gosh, this version doesn't have Carrie. I'm so sorry. We thought it was very important to have Carrie as a part of this team also, just because of that public health link and the public health improvement plan from the state. And so public health is a big deal. And I've had a lot of versions of this presentation, so sorry about that. I'm drawing right now.
So how come public health is in there any more than Road and Bridge or anybody else?
Just because of the goals and efforts on the part of the state with their public health improvement plan and how they're linking climate action to public health. And we don't want a large project management team. We just want to have some representation. And then we also have identified stakeholder organizations and a sector's technical group where people like you're talking about, Doug, would be involved from energy sector, public health, and there's also, we've identified somebody else who would be interested in giving feedback there. And so that's how we've structured things. Oversight, project management, sector's technical group. The idea is that we will secure all the funding. The consultant will lead us through this process, and please interject and interrupt if I'm missing anything. And then we would meet with this technical group and probably have a couple of public meetings. And so that's kind of where things stand and what the tentative plan is so far. And then on the last page, we have the funding sources. $20,000 from the county, $15,000 from the city of Steamboat. I've requested $10,000 from the ski area, and we haven't heard back from that yet. And then the DOLA technical assistance grant would be $25,000. And we should mention that, and I had this conversation with Dan, that this grant, while it is an energy, it is energy impact funds, it's a different pot than the money that we would be requesting for update of the master plan. And so so applying for this grant shouldn't affect our ability to get grant funds to assist with the update of the master plan. So they're separate, unrelated grants.
Can you just talk about how you see, like, what you see each of these teams doing? I mean, I get sort of conceptually the idea of oversight versus project management versus technical, but could you just define that a little bit more?
Sure. So what I said on the back here is we expect the oversight team to oversee strategy, planning, and review of milestones in concert with the project management team. And, you know, maybe a good example is Sarah and I and Winnie met this morning to talk about the greenhouse gas inventory. And I was going to talk about that a little bit during this meeting. The city would like to change the scope of work to include some more specific information about the city. And it would be helpful, and I think it would have been helpful in this case, to have an oversight team who is providing input to making major changes, you know, changes to the scope of work. I told Winnie, like, hey, we can't just make this decision and make it happen. We got to sit down and we talk about it. And so really that's the role of the oversight team, is to oversee that strategy.
So why do we care if what the city wants to do, if we want to do that?
Well, it's a really good point. And because the city is willing to pay for 100% of those changes, then we don't care.
I agree.
But we still need to have the conversation.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, we still need to have the conversation.
No, that makes perfect sense to me. These are, practically speaking, these are all elected officials on the oversight committees.
Right, and we want to make sure that we have
the right place for them to be coming from.
Right, and that's from a policy standpoint. We want to make sure the county is well represented.
Project management team takes care of the nuts and bolts.
So, will you? One other question I had was about the participation of Hayden and Oak Creek and Yampa. Are they committing financially at all to this process,
no,
or they're just on the oversight committee?
Just on the oversight committee. I think that what we would like to do is identify specific things that municipalities can do associated with the climate action plan. And so I think that that's where they may become more involved from a financial standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Isn't the strategies on the
end? It is in the actual implementation of the action plan.
So who's going to do the RFP and who's going to be selecting and all that?
The project management team will develop the RFP. I developed a preliminary RFP that's required for submittal of this DOLA grant, and then we will dive in as a project management team and update that RFP, more details as we, as the process evolves. And, today we talked a little bit about, including resiliency in the plan, and what's the best way to include resiliency given the limited amount of funds that we have? What can we do given our familiarity with, you know, what's happening already, and how can we most be most efficient with the consultant? We don't want to spend money having the consultant chase down all the existing resiliency projects. We kind of all know what they are. So we're, you know, looking to figure out how to get the best bang for your buck with this consultant, given we have limited funds. It looks like $65,000, assuming all of the funding.
Yeah, and we don't want to make sure we don't get a consultant that just copies and pastes from somebody else's study and forgets to even change the name. So
definitely don't want that.
Should we put that in the RFP?
Make sure.
But I
identify for routes.
Sure, the ratings going on the report.
And that's part of the reason we have this structure set up.
That makes sense.
So, you know, everyone has a chance to review and provide input in a structured way.
Okay. Do you guys have any other questions?
So, greenhouse gas study. I mentioned how the city would like to change the scope of work.
Wait, now they want to change the scope of work? I thought you were talking about when they changed it before.
No, for the greenhouse gas study, they would like... So this is what happened, is Winnie got sick. She was gone for 3.5 months. Alan Lynn took over for the city. And then Winnie eventually came back and took over that role for the city. And now she's seeing some things that she would like added to the report, which would require a change in the scope, and she has the funding to make those changes. And so they're going to delay the presentation from Lotus Engineering that was going to be the 19th, and I'm thinking at this point we will also cancel that meeting on the 19th until all of those updates are made, and then the consultant can just come up once, present to both the board and the city council on the same day. And it's looking like probably early mid-January. So, you know, originally when we developed the scope of work, we were moving forward as Route County and all the municipalities included in Route County. As we worked through the process, we noticed...
Which was how the original one was done as well.
Right. So as we worked through the process, we saw where... it could be helpful to divide out specific information about Steamboat Springs. And so, and really the consultant offered to do that. But when we got to the final report, the report didn't include any of the forecasting information for the city. And so really what the city is asking for is more detailed information so they can do the forecasting.
The report looked at 2005, the original report, 2018, and then it forecast forward. And for both 2005 and 2018, the consultant provided both the city of Steamboat Springs and Route County information on their emissions. And so
they wanted the forecast also.
Why aren't you doing the forecasting as well?
How much will that, is that going to delay the project?
I think that rather than have this meeting on the 19th of November, we'll have it... shortly after the winter break, early to mid-January. And I think it's just because of the holidays, you lose some time. And I think that the cost estimate for what the city wanted was around $6,000.
Mm-hmm. And does that change your timeline on the climate action plan?
No. And that's another reason I wanted, let's get together and talk about this.
Right.
And it isn't affecting our timeline for the climate action plan.
I mean, I assume you already have the draft before they requested those changes, or no?
We did have a draft, and it was upon review of that draft that Winnie decided that they wanted that additional work done.
Got it.
And so they can point to direct actionable items on the part of the city. And then, you know, we also learned a little bit through looking at the draft information how different the city and the county were in terms of those emissions, and that, you know, in hindsight, it probably is good to have this information and to look at it separately.
Yeah, and know where the emissions are coming
from. And think about our county, where this population makes up half the population of the entire county.
Well, and
plus you have impact
to
tourism,
where we
entice people to build in the city and not out in the county and not suburban sprawl and the rest.
That's right, and that touches on some of the resiliency efforts that are already built in. And so, you know, we would include that as a part of resiliency,
just
to continue,
probably continue
those types of land management.
So presumably policies. Some of the recommendations coming out of the greenhouse gas study would be incorporated into the climate action and resiliency plan.
That's exactly right. That's the idea. The greenhouse gas study informs the climate action plan. And it'll inform the county a little bit differently than it will inform the city. You know, the city, for example,
Cities,
and, you know, in particular, Steamboat, just because of the population.
Yeah.
An example is, you know, they want to work on an EV implementation or an EV readiness plan.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense for the city of Steamboat. Does it make sense for the county to do an EV? No, not really. It doesn't. And so,
hopefully it could.
Parts, but there are no dealerships outside of Steamboat Springs, right? And part of that is getting people to buy more EVs. And if you don't have a dealership, right.
Then good luck. Yeah.
And we thought about, well, maybe it would be a good idea for the airport to have some charging stations. But if we decide that that's the case, we don't have to have an EV readiness plan.
There's the plan. Done.
Yeah.
The plan is done.
So I think it does make some sense. When we were putting together RFP, we were somewhat budget limited. You know, and so we thought this was a way to move forward, get the best bang for our buck. You know, Winnie at that point wasn't part of the conversation. And so it is what it is. She wants to make those changes. They want to pay for it. I think it'll be a better plan, a better outcome in the long term, and we'll just delay the presentation of the plan for a couple months.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I would love to be our representative on the Oversight Committee, if that's all right with you guys.
Jog.
Love. Strong word, right?
And once we get confirmation, you know,
I just want to make sure we get some, you know, broad-based sound reasoning involved here. And again, not people that are all firm, solid believers, and, you know, that we have just open-minded. I'm open-minded as we move into this, and some of these things really irk me too when we talk about buying renewable energy credits to knock down that's so bogus, it's not even funny. So
I will have sound reasoning.
And there you go. And well, I'm sure you'll report back to us.
That's right.
That's what I want to. That's what I want to hear and know. And you know,
no problem.
And that sounds great.
Perfect. Do you want to tell us more about the grant? Was there any specific information?
Sure. So the city put together the application, sent it to me. I sat down with Jan Sternad and inserted all of the financial information that's needed, and also worked from a scope of work that I think came from Summit County, and then enhanced the RFP that's required, and it's just a preliminary one that's required to be submitted with the grant. So it'll be changed before we go out to bid. So we have the application, we have the draft RFP scope of work. Also went through the grant committee from the county. Tom drafted a memo that's included with that submittal package. So we went through the process that the county has for grants. And so those are the three primary documents that have been submitted. Like I said, this is completely separate from the energy impact funding that we might want to go after for the master plan. It shouldn't affect our ability to get that money. I just confirmed that with Winnie. She can do a much better job explaining the nuances of how all of that works.
Have we confirmed that with DOLA? I mean, do they consider these various funds in relation to one another? I mean, I
haven't talked to DOLA at all, so.
I know. I mean, I just was asking Dan the other day about, do we know how many DOLA requests, potential DOLA requests we have out there? Because we're also thinking about the Human Services Building, like not necessarily within the same year, but just sort of
Garcia's. We've got two applications in on the
for the solar
thing,
right?
Partnering on.
And so
I think we just want to make sure we're not shooting ourselves in the foot on DOLA grants.
Right. And I was assured this morning from Winnie that because of the because they're really unrelated, that it shouldn't affect
I mean,
our
that's great. Great to hear that
different
from
buckets
Winnie.
Of money.
I would love to hear that from DOLA. Okay.
From Greg.
So yeah. This technical assistance grant, and I took terrible notes this morning, just to help projects along. It's a separate program, and you can dip into both buckets. And I don't think that you're limited in how many technical assistance grants you can apply for.
And I think again, maybe someone should just call Greg and make sure that we're all right.
Are we running this for our grant review committee?
Yeah, we already did.
That sounds great. I don't have any other questions. Do you guys have any other questions?
So what do you want to know from Greg exactly? I mean, do you want an email or a memo?
Well, I want us, Route County, to be aware of all the requests we're making to DOLA, and I want to make sure that we're not jeopardizing certain requests because we're not paying attention to all the requests that are being made.
Tom, couldn't you make that phone call? Or
so who are you working through with? Who are you working through with?
He has a good relationship with
Winnie already.
Either Dan or I can do that.
Yeah, I think that'd be simpler than rather than
so
sending an email.
So we're working as the project management team.
Yeah.
And
who did Winnie contact with the tech?
Greg.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think it sounds like Tom or Dan can just give a call to Greg. I think it can be pretty informal. We just want to make sure that we kind of have a sense of the requests that
Greg
we're making.
Tell you if there was a
yeah.
Yeah.
So that's all we need. I don't think it's a
okay.
huge deal. Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else?
I guess the one thing I would add, just based on your comment, is we do want to make sure that we have good representation. And, you know, one of these boxes was advocacy. And really, pro and con, you know, we want to hear from people who, we want to hear from everybody.
Yeah.
And
especially
that helps
to
have the process.
An achievable something that we're going to actually do.
That's right. Right. And we are, you know, I think that's an important part of the process.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Are you thinking of including somebody from our public works in the transportation sector at all?
I thought that I had.
You know, I wish I had. I don't have Wi-Fi for some reason to pull up. We did do a spreadsheet with all the specific people.
Okay. It's just not on this list.
Yeah.
Yes,
and again,
so
I might have pulled.
And we did.
I might have pulled an old version of this.
That's all right.
Carrie's not on
we don't
it.
Have to.
But yes, absolutely.
Pick it. Okay.
And then, you know, we also talk about these things as
Geo's
a part.
On.
I think Geo is on, yeah.
Okay.
And we're also talking about these things as a part of the environmental services management team and have that link to Geo on that team mm-hmm. and a link to planning through Christy.
Great.
And I guess we'll be talking in more detail about our management teams here pretty soon. And I've sent that spreadsheet to you guys already.
That sounds good.
Yep.
I don't have anything else.
Thanks for keeping the ball rolling on this.
So you're going to just put the grant application on the consent agenda? Is that we
that's
probably
right.
could have done it today in retrospect, but that's all right.
That's okay. So, yeah, we'll have the memo from the grant committee, the application, the preliminary scope of work, and I guess an agenda communication form. I haven't done a consent agenda thing in a long time.
Deanna can help.
I'll figure that
same
out.
Same thing as a regular.
And I assume we'll just maybe get that information
form.
From Greg before we approve that. Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.